Captain Frank Mummert with the Maryland School of Sailing and Seamanship. In this week's podcast, Captain Tom Tersey and I will discuss things you need to know when going into an unfamiliar marina. This is a marina that you haven't been into before, and both Captain Tersey and myself have been into multiple unfamiliar marinas, and we'll give you some of the things we look for, as well as some of the things you might want to think about before you choose a marina. Let's get started. Welcome, everybody, to this week's chat. I'm Captain Frank Mummert, for those of you who don't know, and I'm joined here tonight with Captain Tom Tersey. We're both from the Maryland Schools of Sailing and Seamanship, and today we're going to talk about, this is a subject that was presented to us by one of our early participants, entering a strange marina, and I have to admit that I've been entering a lot of strange marinas over my sailing career, but what we're really talking about here is, in cruising, going to some place that's not familiar to you. What would you look for in choosing a marina, and what process would you go through at that point to figure out how to get into the marina safely? Up till about 2 years ago, for those of you who don't know, my wife and I lived aboard a 45-foot sailboat, and in the summertime, we were up here in Maryland at the Langford Bay Marina, but we would leave here at the end of the season, and we'd go down the Intercoastal Waterway and go down and visit usually the east coast of Florida. And in doing that, we would actually anchor out five nights in a row. But usually about every fifth week or every fifth day, we'd have to go into a marina to get cleaned up, do laundry, pick up any groceries we needed, that kind of thing. So we became very adept at figuring out how to choose a marina and then communicating with the marina to figure out how to get in safely, get fuel, get we didn't get pumped out because we had a waste processing system, marine sanitation device type 1. But a lot of times we did have to get into kind of narrow spaces. And if you can imagine our 45 foot sailboat with a Morgan Ketch. So there was a lot of sailboat there. But let's talk, we're going to start out by talking about something we do several times a year. When we do the Delmarvas, we do the Delmarva circumnavigations. We have a stop where we go into Cape Charles City. And use the town harbor there. And so, Tom, you've done this a significant number of times. Why don't you talk about, if you could, some of the preps that we do to get into that marina with a random crew?
Yeah, okay. Well, one thing that's guaranteed that when I go in there, it's always going to be dark. Okay, very, very, very rarely have I ever entered there in the daylight. I think one time I've entered in the daylight. The channel into Cape Charles City, Cape Charles, by the way, is on the eastern shore of 15 or so miles north of the Cape Charles Point at the end of the Delmarva Peninsula. And the channel in there is well marked. But some of the shoaling comes up very close to the channel, so you have to be very attentive to your navigation into that channel. And the channel has two dog legs and one puppy leg. And so, therefore, in the dark, you're making these turns and trying to stay in the channel, not run aground and so forth. One side of the channel is pretty open, but the other side, it shoals in pretty well. A couple of years ago, they had replaced all of the buoys, the navigational buoys coming into the channel, with dayboards, basically lighted dayboards. And That makes it much better than it used to be. But we still do very thorough advanced preparation before we go in. We of course have all the charts out. We plot our way in. We have our waypoints and our courses that we're going to be on as we go up the channel. And we're going to, of course, identify the different buoys, and we look the buoys up in the light list and see how current they are. And the notices to mariners and the broadcast notices to mariners. We look up, we do very thorough homework in advance. And as far as the route in and the markings and so forth and the depths, et cetera. So going in there is always a challenge, especially when it's dark. And that's the kind of thing that we have to go through as far as preparing for that. But I cannot say enough about the necessity, like virtually everything we do in sailing. If you want to be successful in the various things that you're doing, you have to do advanced preparation, you have to do your homework, and you have to be very thorough and meticulous about it. And then the other thing is you have to deploy your crew properly. So we normally have when we're doing this, well, we're doing it with a full crew of six people, the captain, the first mate, and then four student crew. And we'll have one of the student crew on the helm, and then we'll have someone who's assigned as a navigator. And the person assigned as the navigator is going to monitor on the chart plotter and the charts, the paper charts, our route into the channel as we're going in there. And then we're also going to have a bow lookout, someone who's depending on the weather, maybe up in the bow if it's real light, but maybe if there's partly foggy, might be up on the bow, but normally looking out from within the cockpit. And a deckhand who will trim sails if necessary, if we still have our sails up, and do other deck chores, getting lines ready for tie up fenders and all that sort of a thing. And of course, the captain orchestrates all of this. So when we do it, we do our advanced planning like 24 hours in advance. So we're not doing it at the last moment and rushing and getting it wrong. So we gather all of our data, break out the proper charts and light lists and so forth, mark our waypoints on the chart and in the chart plotter, determine available visual bearings that may be available to us as we're going in, like in addition to the buoys and the beacons that are in there, there's also range lights on two of the legs. And we want to know what those range lights, where they are, what kind of lights they are, what's the flashing sequence, what's the color, and what is the bearing between the two beacons that are on that range. And that range will point down one of the channels. And then another range pointing down another channel. So we want to know very, very thoroughly what those conditions are going in. And we haven't run aground in there yet. So
Yeah.
that's some of the stuff we have to do.
Now, I want to. Now, I know when I'm going in there, I generally give the marina a call if I can call them during the day on the on a cell phone. Do you do that, or do you wait until you're close enough to use the VHF radio?
Well, I normally do it on a cell phone, but in doing that, depends what I'm getting in. If I'm getting in daylight and I can contact the marina, that's great. Otherwise, we go in the dark and find a place alongside. Well, there may be open slips and there may be just T heads that we're going to tie up to. So if it's late, we're going to go into a T head and not talk to anybody really. And then the next morning, get in touch with the marina.
Yeah, it's interesting. On one of my trips down the ICW, we were scheduled to arrive at a marina in near Myrtle Beach in on the ICW, and we were coming in on Thanksgiving Day, and we had talked to the marina a couple of days prior to that, and they said, we don't have anybody is going to be working that day, but we'll talk to our liveaboards that we know are going to be here. When you get close, call, just put a random call out on channel 16, and somebody will be ready for you. And when we were about a half mile away from them, we went ahead and we put out a call for it. And when we got there, there were three people standing on the dock waiting for us. So the phone is a good way to talk to the marina, but if you're going to need help and it's outside of hours, what we found on Rock Hopper was that it was putting out a call to the marina. Sometimes people are listening and will help you.
People are normally helpful. One of the things that's really important in going into a strange marina, now Cape Charles, I know well, we've been in there many times, but if you're going into an unfamiliar marina, you have to have your crew really on their toes as far as being fully tuned in to what it is that we're doing and how we're doing it. And therefore, that the entire crew is involved in the navigation preparation before we go in. So they know what to look for. Now, this is an unfamiliar marina. And one of the things that's always a hazard, a risk in doing that, is that our crew starts to admire the scenery and they do sightseeing and they stop navigating the boat. They stop doing proper lookout. So we don't allow cell phones amongst the crew during that period of time. We want them to be really riveted to what it is that we're doing and not be sightseeing. And we're going to, for example, identify particular landmarks or buoys as we go in. Now, we've prepared these ahead of time. We know what are the landmarks and buoys and beacons and everything that we're going to see as we go in. And we want to be sure that our deck lookouts spot those things, advise the helmsman that they've got a particular mark bearing 30 degrees off the starboard bow, something like that. And also point out the different navigational aids to the helmsman. So when we know that we have, let's say, buoy number 10, red 10 coming up a quarter mile ahead. And once a deck crew spots that buoy, we have to identify it, verify what it is, and then point it out to the helmsman and make sure the helmsman sees it, because he may be concentrating on, you know, various other things, and got to ensure that he sees it.
Yeah. Now, you made the point that we often go into Cape Charles City, and so we're very aware of it. What about if you're looking at, now, one of the ways that I choose to, one of the ways that I look at an area is the first thing I'm going to look at is either Active Captain, which is the electronic database, or the local cruising guide. And each of those will list the marinas in the area. What are some of the things you're looking for if you're looking for a new marina? You're going into an area. What are you looking for in a marina?
Well, if I talk to the marina ahead of time, and if I'm going to get in late, I'll talk to them, you know, before office hours close. But basically, I want to know a lot more about the entrance channel from the standpoint of currents and wind direction, prevailing wind direction, and the lay of, like, if I'm going to go into the fuel dock, pump out dock, and I want to know what direction that dock lays in. And am I going to tie up to that port side two, starboard side two, or am I going to have to do a 180 as I get into it? But basically, I want to talk to the marina for their local knowledge. You always hear about local knowledge. Well, I definitely want to query the marina on that, on what they see, the things I should know. What's the depth going in? What is the wind direction? What are the current flows normally? We're going to be getting in at maximum ebb tide. How's that going to affect? And that's another important point, to know what are the tides and what direction is the current flowing as you approach that that estuary.
Yeah. I'm reminded of two areas on the Chesapeake Bay. The first one is the Deltaville area. Basically, if you're going into the Deltaville in the town of Deltaville, there's actually three water areas. There's a north side that's off the Rappahannock, and then there's basically two off the Piankatank. And the approach in the north one, as you know, has that very long, very narrow straight channel. But the one into the middle area, just south of the Deltaville area, has a nasty dogleg that's not very well marked. So choosing a marina in that area, those are going to be things I'm going to make a to look at, as you said, what are the weather conditions and how is that going to affect which of those channels would be better for me to use? I once went into that middle area with the dogleg on Christmas Eve, and there wasn't a lot of people around to help out with that one.
There was nobody there to rate you either, right?
That's true. That's true. Which I would of course meant that my docking was perfect. You know,
I went into a marina one time, and there were two old guys sitting in deck chairs on the dock watching people come in. And believe it or not, they actually had numbered cards from 1 to 10. And they would hold them up. You're a 3 coming in here. One of the other things you want to do when you're talking to the marina and you're trying to decide, do I want to go into Marina A or Marina B? Well, you also want to know what facilities they have. And of course, you can go to local cruising guides and read up on that, but I'm not sure that they're always up to date. Mm-hmm. So you certainly want to ask the marina about, do they have diesel? Do they have pump out? Do they have water, electric? Is there a restaurant? Is there a store? They have showers. You know, you want to know all about these things.
Yeah.
And where do you want us to go initially? Directly to a slip or right to the diesel dock or what? So you want to know those things before you decide.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people, a lot of the marinas that when we first started back in 2014, 2015, this wasn't as much of a thing. But by the time we were, by 2020, 2021, a lot of the marinas were using either Dockwa or Snag-a-Slip because it was explained to me by one of the marina owners that it used to be that people would look at how far they were going to travel and they'd choose a marina that was at like 40 miles, one at 45 miles, and one at 50 miles. And if they had a good day, they'd go all the way to the one at 50 miles. And if they had a bad day, they could stop at the one at 40 miles. And they'd actually make reservations at all three marinas. And one of the things that Dockwa does is because when you make the reservation, you get charged. That's wiped a lot of that out. So it's definitely, to my mind, it's definitely become harder to just kind of pick a first choice, second choice, third choice marina. You're kind of locking in at the beginning of your trip where you're going to be that evening. How far in advance do you normally, like if you're going to go on a multi-day trip, how far in advance do you usually contact your second day, third day marinas? Do you do that at the beginning?
I try to do it long in advance, like, and it depends when the season is, you know, when am I doing that? But if I'm at a busy time transiting the area I'm going to be in, I might make a reservation a month ahead of time. But also you mentioned Dockwa, and I've used those several times. I like, though, quite frankly, talking to the marina. And I always have a feeling that when I go through Dockwa or someone else making a reservation for me, I'm never really sure whether I'm going to get what I think I'm getting. So a month ahead of time, if I'm not sure which marina I'm going to go to, but I'm trying to decide, I want to call a couple of marinas and talk to them well in advance. And I personally prefer to make the reservation at that time. But there's another thing, too, in relation to this that I think about. You know, there's some areas where there are mooring balls where you can latch onto a mooring ball for overnight. And there's two things that I'm always cautious about on the mooring ball. Number one, how secure is it? And I've seen boats being blown, dragging their mooring balls across the harbor in relatively gentle winds. I've seen that a couple of times. But the other is when a marina puts out mooring balls, that costs them money and they expect to be paid for it. So you really have to be honest in that. And if you're going to use a mooring ball, don't just go pick up the mooring overnight and then sneak out in the morning without paying. You really want to be an honest tender here and pay the people.
We've done that. We stopped down in Solomon's first year and took a mooring ball at Zanheiser's back when they were Zanheiser's and called them first thing in the morning and said, "Hey, we were on your ball." And they said, "Great, this is what we're going to charge you." And we went, "Okay."
Yeah, right.
Some places take the attitude of if you came in after and left before, but it's always better to call the marina. I've
Oh, I
also
see.
seen people do that. They'll come in, stop on a fuel dock overnight, and then try to leave in the morning before that. And, it's not fair to the marina.
No, it's not. It's not. Plus,
Go ahead.
you can also query the marina about if you're going to go on a mooring ball and ask them ahead of time what is their maintenance schedule on their moorings. When was the last time they had those moorings out and reset the anchors and so forth? And what kind of integrity of the lines and so forth? So you don't want to break away during the night, especially if it blows.
Another good tool that's come out in the last, I guess, 10, 15 years is marina maps on the websites, so that you can actually see what the layout of the marina is before you go in. Have you had any experience with that?
That's a very important point. You can look at the charts, the navigational chart, but a lot of times the navigational chart doesn't give you really adequate details on the dockage that's in that marina. And to get a map of the marina, I think is vitally important. Again, you're educated ahead of time, a very important advanced prep.
Have you ever gone into this? Anybody's ever taken a docking class for me has heard these stories. Have you ever gone into a marina and you've been told this is where your slip's going to be, and when you got there was something in the slip?
Oh yeah, how often has that happened? Also, is the slip really big enough for my boat? I've gone into marinas where I've got 20 foot of the boat hanging out past the last pole in the slip, and am I really satisfied with this? Which brings up another point about doing flybys of where you might be docking, what the slips are, and so forth, before you finalize arrangements. Like if the marina has told you you'll be in slip B18, go take a look at that before you get to the fuel dock, and decide if you're going to like that slip, and does it look like it's an adequate slip for you? Does it look like you can maneuver your boat into that slip, down the fairway, making a turn back, going in backwards or going in forward? So are you going to be happy with that before you finalize arrangements with the marina? So a flyby is also a good thing to do.
Again, if you've ever taken a docking class from me, that's one of the things I always tell people when I go into the marina, I go in anticipating that I'm going to turn around and come back out. Because if you're mentally prepared to turn around and come back, you won't get stuck trying to stick a bad landing.
Right.
You remember the year you and I did the 108 together, and we were coming back into the marina across from Cobb's, and we came in late at night, and we knew where our slip was, but when we got down into that area, almost every boat extended past the end of the pilings,
Yeah.
and in order for us to get in and come, we had to actually go past our slip far enough down that there was open slips on either side of us to give us enough room to turn the boat and come back into our slip.
Yeah. Another thing is dock hands. A lot of times, if it's again during business hours, the marina is going to provide somebody to come down the dock and take a line from you, which is always very helpful. One of the problems comes up when the guy on the dock wants to tell you how to dock your boat. And when I have my line handler on my boat, who's going to pitch a bow line or a spring line, to the fellow on the dock, I want my person to say to him, take this loop and put it on that cleat. You know, give him very specific directions. And if the guy on the dock starts giving you a hard time about how you should be docking your boat, just ignore him and do it your way.
Yeah. I've said it 100 times. Nobody in the history of recreational boating has ever said the dock hit the boat.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, now I realize when I say this, somebody might take the opposite view and they might say, the guy on the dock knows more about that dock and the conditions there than you do on your boat. And I say, well, yeah, but I know more about my boat and how it handles than he does. So there's a little trade-off here, but my own position is I tell my deckhand to say, you tell the guy on the dock what to do with this line, and don't be swayed by his instructions to you.
Yeah. Frank, let's see.
Frank, it's almost 7:30.
Yep, and I'm looking to. Oh, here we go. I was just looking for another question. What if you're on a charter? Would you be more willing to be swayed by dock advice?
No, I would not personally. Yeah. I still feel that I know more about what I want to do. See, one of the problems when a guy on the dock starts giving you directions, you've already scoped it out. You have your plan on how you're going to approach that dock and how you're going to dock. And you might be in the midst of that. Now, one of the parts of your plan also is, what is my abort plan? In other words, if I get to a point and I see that it's not going right, maybe because of windage or because of a current in the water, or I see nails sticking out of the pilings, or, you know, whatever, but I have some purpose, I have some reason that I want to abort the docking that I'm coming into. Now, if he starts giving me directions, he may screw up my plan, and if I have to abort, I may be too late in exercising my abort option. So yeah. Charter boat or not, I want to be in charge of the boat and decide. And if I make a mistake, fine. All right. You know, I'm at fault, but yeah, I don't want to be swayed by the guy on the dock.
Yeah. I'd hate to be trying to explain to the charter company. Yeah. Everything was going fine until the guy on the dock screwed it up. If it's my error, it's my error.
Right.
Let's see, what's the appropriate amount to tip a dockhand?
I usually do $5.
I'll go between 5 and 10, depending on how much, two things. One, how much help they actually provided. If all he did was stand there and look at me, yeah, he's not going to get as big a tip. But the other thing is, if I'm coming back, if I know that I'm going to be coming back to this marina, I'll usually tip a little bit more just to create a sense of goodwill. Dock hands remember boats.
Yeah.
When might you decide not to go into an unfamiliar marina in the dark? Seems like that would be a good time to take a ball. Actually, I think unless you, if I get close to the marina and I'm not seeing a lot of lights, if it was just me and Suzanne and I didn't see a lot of lights, we're going to anchor out and not worry about going into the marina. Even if I paid for the marina, I don't want to be screwing around in a dark marina. Most of the marinas I've gone into at night have been fairly well lit, so it's not as big of a problem. What do you think?
Yeah, well, that's a good point about not going in. If you're unsure, you're unsteady, lay off. And as you say, anchor if conditions permit. You might be in stinky weather conditions and you might not want to anchor. It might be forecast to blow gale forced winds tonight, you know, so what are you going to do?
Yeah. And usually if you can't get into the dock or into the slip you've been assigned because it's bad weather or because it's dark, I would lay up on the fuel dock.
Yeah.
You won't have electricity, but you'll at least be not moving.
The fuel docks are normally relatively easy access because they want people coming in and out just to get fuel, you know. So the fuel dock is a good place to go if nothing looks good.
Okay, we're going to take just a couple more questions. I've got one that says, do you carry on board a fender board if you just might be heading into a marina that has fixed docks versus floating docks? I always did. I always had a fender board, about an 8-foot fender board on board. It was a whole lot easier to put in place. I don't like putting fenders down until the boat is stopped because I was once in a situation where I had fenders over the side. This was very early in my boating career. I had fenders over the side next to a dock. We were leaving as a fuel dock. We were starting to leave, and the fender rolled up onto the dock itself, got caught on a cleat, and it had a lot of potential for things going badly. So I like to leave by the fender board. I'll put the fender board down, but I don't like to put actual fenders down until I'm tied up.
Yeah, a fender board is a good thing, and the other part of that is depending on whether you have pilings external to the dock or cleats. And if you have pilings and you have good rub strakes on your boat, you might be okay without the board. Maybe just a horizontal fender, you know, tied on two ends horizontally.
I like the flat tailor boards, the plastic or the non-inflatables. Those are good. I've got a note here. My standing turn is to starboard, therefore I want to know, will my slip be on my port or starboard side? I can turn to starboard and back into a port slip. That's going to be an important piece of information, because if you have to turn around in the fairway, generally speaking, fairways are about 1.5 times the depth of the slips. So if you're in a 40-foot slip, generally the fairway is going to be about 60 feet, or a little bit bigger. But yeah, it's really important to know what side the how you're going to twist into that slip, particularly if you're a shorthanded crew.
This brings up, Frank, another point now that you're mentioning this about our docking bridle. And I'd like to suggest to everyone that they look on our list of videos online and look at the one that talks about the docking bridle. And basically, what the bridle is, it's a, say, for a 40-foot boat, it's about maybe 60 foot long. And we take about 20 foot from one end and tie a loop. And a fairly large loop, like 2 foot in diameter loop. And we can take that loop and place it over a piling. But before we get to the dock, we can take the shorter of the two legs and tie it to the bow cleat on the side we're going on in on, and take the longer leg and put it on the midship cleat. And then all the deckhand or dockhand has to do is take the loop end that we hand the guy on the dock and put it over that piling or put it on that cleat. And then we can back on that and pull the boat in nice and sweet. So take a look at the video that we have on our YouTube videos about docking bridle.
Yeah, I have to say that I'm getting multiple comments about the docking bridle video, because everybody, I know that once you and I actually did something similar to that, only I used two different lines. And when you showed me the one line with two legs idea, it was like the light bulb went off and everything is great. And I have used that to get into slips. I have used that to get into on flat docks. If you use it, you can use if you learn how to use it well, it's going to save your behind over and over and over again.
Yeah, it makes it dummy proof. Because
Yeah, and since we never know what the guy on the dock is saying, put this loop on that piling is exactly that. I got a question. Does the docking course teach bridle? Absolutely. Absolutely. Will there be a video available this webinar? Absolutely, yes. Again, the video, what you're going to see, the video is basically what you're seeing right now. That's going to be up probably next week. We try to put the podcast and the video up on YouTube the opposite week of our production so that people have something to watch. And if you want to see that, the best way to get to it is to go to our website, www.mdschool.com, and find on the front page, there's a link to our YouTube channel, and that's the easiest way to get there. Tom is putting these chats up on the YouTube channel. But that's where you're also going to find you're going to find the docking video, you're going to find the bridal video, all kinds of stuff, all good information out there. You'll hear the podcast for this, which is just the audio, will be available next week. And at that point, I'm going to ask Rita if she has anything to say. And then Rita, you there? Rita, have I muted you?
She must be feeding the horses.
It's feeding the horses time. Let me check real quick.
All right, so do we have any other questions, Frank, from the folks?
I'm going to real quick take this one. Can you recommend a training video for how to handle the dinghy coming in and out of the marina? I don't know a good one for that.
But let me describe my process for handling a dinghy. And
Go
I don't
ahead.
know if I did this before, but basically what I like to do is I hope you have two painters on it. And I pull the dinghy up way short, real short, onto the stern of the boat. And I tie the two painters, one on port, one on starboard, on my stern cleats. And I actually pull them up to get the bow of the dinghy snug up to the boat. And in fact, I even lift the bow of the dinghy out of the water by a foot or so. And it's going to rest on your transom. And if you have a rubber dinghy, it's no big deal. And you go in, it's going to follow your boat around just like a puppy dog. And there's no risk of getting your painters tangled up in your prop. And if you back the boat, you can back right into the dinghy, and the dinghy is just going to turn to the side and be pushed in back of your boat. So that's how I handle a dinghy. Now, if I have a hard dinghy, that might be a little bit problematic as far as scratching up transom of your boat. You can always have anti-scratch. You can have padding basically on the bow of the dinghy to minimize that. But
Yeah.
that's how I like to handle a dinghy.
Now, I one of the things we towed a dinghy all up and down the East Coast for a variety of reasons. And one of the things I started doing is that when we came into the marina, I would move the painter up to the bow because I knew I was going to back into the slip, and I would back in
Right.
end up at the bow. But yeah, as soon as I could, once we got underway, I would go ahead and move it, do exactly what you talked about, which is shift it to the stern tight up. Rita, are you there now?
I am there. Thank
Excellent.
you. I couldn't unmute.
Excellent.
The only thing I have to add is if anybody has further questions or you would like to suggest a topic, you can email office@mdschool.com. You can find us many places. Our website is mdschool.com. So MD as in the initials for Maryland. So mdschool.com. We have a Facebook page. We have a public Facebook group that you can join, ask questions there. And we, of course, have our YouTube channel, which has, oh, I don't know, how many videos at this point, Tom? 50, 60? What are we up to?
Somewhere around 60.
Yeah. And then our new podcast. So if you are podcast listeners, you can search for Serious sailing, comma, serious school, and it should come up. So any questions, please do let us know.
And Tom, what's our subject for our next one?
Our next one is going to talk about offshore emergencies and how to evaluate those. We have a process that we go through in order to look at the probability and the seriousness of various potential offshore emergencies. And what we did in coming up with this study, and there's a video on this as well, by the way, is that we wrote down about 50 different topics. You know, you somebody goes overboard, you lose a mainsail, or your engine breaks, or you lose your steering. You know, we came up with about 50 topics. And then we went through an analysis of those topics and came up with probability estimates for them. And so we'll talk about that.
I am truly looking forward to it. I know I've talked with you about this before, but you know, this is something that I'm really looking forward to. All right, folks, thank you all for your time, and we appreciate you being here, and we look forward to seeing you here 2 weeks from now and in the school in the spring. Bye. Well, that's it for this episode of Serious Sailing, Serious School. If you'd like to contact us, you can send us an email at office@mdschool.com. And please put chat in the header. If you'd like to know more about us, we're at www.mdschool.com. Look forward to seeing you, and we hope you'll be at the school soon. Bye.